So, hi, this is Robert Rogers. I'm 55 years old, and I am here with my friends Joe and Paco, and we are in Sarasota, Florida. So, you guys want to introduce yourselves?
Hi, it's great to be here with you, Robert.
Hi, I'm Paco.
I'm Joe.
And happy to help out. Yeah.
So, you're the first couple that I have I've had the chance to interview. And I thought this might be a really nice opportunity to share a love story. Hmm. I don't know if you want to talk about how you met, you know, how it's been. You've been together for a while, I understand.
We have. We've known each other now for almost 35 years.
Wow.
And have been together for 34 years and officially married, according to the new laws that the Supreme Court allowed, for almost 4 years.
Okay.
So.
Wow, that's wonderful.
That's our.
That's wonderful.
Sort of story in a nutshell. So how we met is interesting. That I'm a musician, and I was asked to be the director of music for the Georgetown University Law School's Gilbert and Sullivan Society, and this happened in the spring of 1984. I did a production with them. They liked the work I did. They engaged me for the fall, and it was in that fall that they decided not to do a Gilbert and Sullivan show. They were going to do a Broadway review, and Paco came out for an audition. So,
I was in law school at the time.
He was in law school?
First year law school.
Okay.
Third year. Well, that was in the third year.
That was in the third year. And
but so, I've been involved in the group since the beginning, since my first year.
Okay.
So there was, you kind of know things sometimes, so
your heart stops beating.
Yeah, so in the midst of his audition, I'm sitting there playing the piano and listening to him sing, and I thought, he's kind of interesting.
Was this sort of love at first sight kind of thing? Is that
I think there was sort of an interest at first, because at the time we were dating other people.
Okay.
And so we kind of flirted off and on through that show, and that ended, and then it wasn't until the spring show, or actually in the winter when they started the rehearsals, we came back together again, and by that point our other relationships had ended. And in one of the rehearsals, Paco was talking about going home and watching Dynasty. Now this is back in 1985 when Dynasty
best
was
cat fights ever.
Big, yes, exactly. You know,
God.
There's nothing like Crystal and Alexis. So this is on I can't remember what night of the week it was, but I had to stay at the rehearsal later, and I had said, I like Dynasty, but I'm going to miss it because I'm going to be here late. And Paco says, well, you know what?
No worries. I taped it.
the VCR, and you could just put your tape in, and record it and all sorts of stuff. So he had set it up to tape and said, come on over afterwards and watch it.
So he did. He came over afterwards. We talked on like 3 in the morning.
We never saw the episode.
And we never
Dynasty.
Saw the episode.
Somehow that never even came up. In the process.
Who cares about Dynasty, right?
and then the gay culture, what do you establish as an anniversary date? It's an interesting thing because, there's no, those days there was nothing like, marriage or official commitment or the thought of something like that. So what do you establish? And so we established that date as being the date of our relationship starting.
So I have a question. I'm just curious. So did your having seen one another and spent that time together, did that influence the outcome of your respective relationships? Or did you, having sort of gotten the
news? I think both relationships were on the way out already. They were logically ending. I mean, if you can call a relationship as logically ending, but at least in both of our cases, that was happening.
Okay.
And
the timing was
amazing.
Providential.
And then we had...
The funny thing is that months later, he asked me, we never watched that Dynasty episode, and I confessed that I have never taped it.
I'd always said
that's the best.
Our relationship.
So I said our relationship's always built on a ruse.
It works.
And it works. I'm still waiting to see that episode.
And someday.
Someday. I'm afraid if I see it, though, that might end it all. So.
But yeah, so that's what started it all. Dynasty.
Dynasty started in theater.
Yeah, so February 6th has always been our anniversary date. You know.
And funny, when we got married, my niece set up a WhatsApp chat for the whole family,
okay,
including Joe, of course, and my nephews and nieces and sisters, and my sister and brother, and she called it Dynasty. She set it up at our wedding.
So our wedding,
we're bringing the family together.
Because at the wedding itself, we told this story to everyone who was there. Because people, I don't think they really knew how we met. So we relayed the story to everyone, and literally that night, before she got back to the hotel. I mean, she had already set up this WhatsApp account with Dynasty as the name of it, and included all the family.
The Dynasty.
So we were the Dynasty.
I mean, that, wow. I'm curious as well. So, Paco, what took you to D.C.? You're originally from San Juan, right?
So I went to, funny, you said earlier you had been to boarding school. I went to boarding school in Connecticut. And from there, went to college in Massachusetts at Amherst.
Okay.
And then went to law school in Washington, D.C., to Georgetown. And so it was while I was in Georgetown that we had the Gilbert and Sullivan Society. That took me to D.C. Got a job in Washington with the federal government and stayed. I mean, okay. My dad was a lawyer in Puerto Rico, where I'm from, and you gotta come back, you're a lawyer, you gotta come back to practice here. And so it was very difficult, I think, for us to move at that time as a gay couple to Puerto Rico. Now it's changed a lot.
Well,
2019 is
radically different.
Totally different.
Is it really?
So radically
at the
different.
Time, what would it would not have been safe for you?
Well, or? Culturally, it's still Puerto Rico at the time was very conservative.
Mm-hmm.
The Catholic Church at the time still retained a lot of control, I think, that has loosened up since. And certainly my family, being Catholic and being very protective. I mean, my parents, I think, knew because they loved Joe.
Mm-hmm.
And my brothers and sister did too.
It was an interesting dynamic because...
But I think socially...
Yeah.
It was very frowned upon.
Mm-hmm.
Although there was an underground gay culture in Puerto Rico that's been there for a very long, long time. So, but I decided to stay in Washington.
Yeah.
And
also,
we moved together. We moved in together.
Right. So I originally from Georgia, but we moved up to the D.C. area when I was 7. And basically, D.C. became my home.
That's right,
you know,
right.
And that's the home I knew. And then when I went off to college and then came back to D.C., I mean, it was, that was it. You know, so, and I'd already established a bit of a career. And, you know, Paco was just starting out in his career. So it made sense for us to stay there.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think we ever envisioned staying there as long as we did. But things happened.
Well,
you know,
but then the way things developed.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's like, I don't think we ever thought of moving anywhere else.
Well, there was one trip we took out to the West Coast. And we both fell in love with the city of San Francisco.
Yeah,
I mean,
so open, to
so open for gay
way.
People, and also you know the you're in the city, but you can be within the country.
Marin, Sonoma,
you know,
Napa.
I mean all the woods, the valleys with the vineyards. You know, the parks.
So beautiful.
I mean, within half an hour, you can be out of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was really attractive.
Very far
to us.
From my family. I'm still very attached.
Are
to
you?
My family. Oh, yeah.
Very close.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
That's why the entire family came to the wedding.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. They were all there. I mean, almost every single person from his
my
side of the family.
My nephews and nieces and sister and brother and, yeah, so.
It's
and yours, too.
Thing.
Yeah, a lot of my family was, too.
But
they
to
I mean, they came up from Puerto Rico.
Yeah. Was it here?
It was here in Sarasota.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And what's interesting, the dynamics were... You know,
and his dad officiated. Yeah.
My dad officiated.
His dad is a Presbyterian
minister. He's a Presbyterian
minister.
Oh,
and we've
God.
Been going to a Lutheran church here every Sunday. And so we asked the pastor if it would be okay for his dad, a Presbyterian minister, to come celebrate.
Mm-hmm.
He said, sure, of course. So the fact that the church allowed us to get married there and that they allowed Joe's dad to actually do the actual
it's a big step.
Ceremony was very special for us.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's beautiful.
It was a beautiful ceremony.
And then Joe, and we haven't talked about this, but Joe joined the Army after we started dating and was in the Army for 20 years. So at the wedding, he wore his Army uniform, and I wore my dad's suit that he used when he married my mother, which fit to the T. I mean, it was perfect. And he had given it to me many years before he passed away. And I had pulled it out of the closet, and I said, "Dad, what is this?" "Oh, that's the suit I married your mother in."
Yeah, thanks.
Try it on. I mean, it was like
it fit.
It was perfect. Like a girl tailored with her mom.
Oh, right.
"Mom, you're saving your dress? This is the dress you use for your wedding?"
Yeah.
"Yes, honey, try it." You know, that's what Dad said. "Try it on." And I tried it on, and it fit. And so Dad said, "Do you want it?" I said, "Yeah, I'd love it. I'd love to keep it." And he said, "Maybe you'll be married someday." So I'm not sure whether he meant to Joe or to somebody else or to, but I think he actually
knew. But it happened in that suit.
In that suit.
We actually knew.
So. The interesting dynamic is that we never sat down with Paco's parents and said,
I never told them.
And then we never told them. I mean, we were just ourselves with them. Mm-hmm. And with my parents, it was different because they asked early on. I mean, it was in my 20s.
Okay.
And my dad asked me specifically, and I'm not going to lie to him.
Yeah.
You know, but I was a little bit hesitant because, you know, he's a Presbyterian minister, you know, and I had that whole upbringing in the South.
Mm-hmm.
And I was kind of scared. You know, how would I approach this?
How fortunate you both are, though.
Yeah, and both my parents, I mean, parent and step-parent, I mean, have all fully embraced not only me, but also Paco every step of the way, and we've been very blessed in that regard. And even his parents, even though they didn't specifically know, they always were respectful of us, included us in everything. We traveled together.
We traveled with them.
Trips.
I mean, they knew we slept in the same bed.
Mm-hmm. And we visit them in Puerto Rico.
It's as if they didn't want it confirmed.
Yeah.
I'd rather not know.
Didn't
you
discuss it?
So his dad referred to me sometimes as Paco's business partner. Partner in the sense
your
of
partner.
Yeah. Yeah, like, you know.
Yeah. Okay.
And then
you're a real close buddy.
And how were you introduced socially? I'm curious. I mean, you know, with you alluded to that a little bit, with your family, that's maybe socially it wasn't entirely acceptable. So when you went out with them, for example, and you saw friends or something like that. I mean, was your father, was he obviously discreet about the introduction? Or?
Yeah.
Always.
I mean, always. It was, you know, and Paco's friend
was
visiting with us.
Yeah.
We had an interesting thing happen.
Su amigo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He also referred to me sometimes as his prosthetic son. You know, the hijo postizo.
Yeah. Yeah.
Another way.
Well, it's not quite translated as prosthetic. It's translated more as in my
additional son.
Additional son.
My son wannabe.
Yeah, something like that. It's not prosthetic as in a leg.
But it was a term of endearment.
Yeah.
You know, it definitely was. I mean, he was, both his parents were remarkable people. They've since passed away. But we did have an interesting experience at a wedding. Once, and this is the wedding of my brother.
Discrimination, you mean?
No, not discrimination.
Oh,
whatsoever.
Oh, okay.
No, it's how we were introduced.
Okay.
And I had arrived into Omaha, Nebraska for this wedding, and my brother was 6 years younger than I am, and Paco came in a day or two later, and he arrived just in time for the ceremony and then the reception followed.
Okay.
So at this reception, we were being taken around and introduced to various people. And some of the people were parents of my brother's new wife. And she had been given up for adoption. And so it's very complicated, very open.
So
she knew the adoptive
parents.
Natural
parents,
right?
Of course, the adoptive
parents. And the adoptive parents. But all of them had not only been married, but they'd been divorced and married other people. So she had 8 parents. Right,
and it was
Paco's being taken around. So this is her
mother. But I didn't know this part.
He didn't know this part.
Okay.
And they're all there, and so Joe's stepmom. And I want you to meet. Oh, this is Joe's. What was it that she called me?
No, she didn't say that. They asked eventually. So who is this person? They thought that he was the brother from Hawaii. The
other family member.
The other family member from Hawaii who wasn't able to make it to this ceremony, right? But somehow he was suddenly there. Is this Eric's brother that we haven't met?
What's great is that, Paco, you weren't privy to any of that. So you were probably like standing there like, what is
so
going
what's
on?
Going on here? And these are, what was her name? The bride's name?
Jenny.
Jenny, not his current wife.
Yeah, they...
But Jenny, these are Jenny's parents. Oh, so nice to meet you. Oh, I'm Paco. Yeah, oh, it was nice to meet you. Okay. And then Joe's dad would bring me along and say, come, I want you to meet Jenny's parents. Oh, but I, no, this is his mother and his her husband. Oh, okay. And then we went along and we're standing in the buffet line and said, hi, and you are? I'm Paco. Oh, I'm Jenny's mother. Oh, okay. And finally I went to just like, wait a minute.
It's a little bit like, what's my line?
Yeah, yeah.
Is this person real or not?
Who's who here? Yeah. Because there were so many of them. So.
You know, but the funny thing was that, well, my stepmother introduced Paco eventually because they asked, you know, yeah, so who is this person we keep meeting? And she says, oh, well, that's, and I'm known, well, so they said that's Joe's life partner.
Which was kind of pretty. It was the first time.
It was the first time that, I mean, she's always been supportive.
Life partner. She's a Lutheran minister.
She's a Lutheran pastor. And she's always wanted to do a ceremony for us. She said, even if it's in our backyard, we want to do something for you. I mean, this is since day one.
Ceremony or whatever.
She's been very supportive.
Very supportive and strongly supportive. And ultimately, she became a member of a high-ranking member of the Lutheran Church,
mm-hmm.
and was outspoken in terms of gay rights,
mm-hmm.
and ultimately became a part of the legislature in South Dakota.
Okay.
It was elected
to the legislature, and as a state legislator, she was also advocate for gay rights.
Okay.
So very strongly supportive, and you know, I mean, so in that nurturing environment.
My parents knew, my brother and sister knew. I mean, they just didn't want to ask. They didn't want to know. In fact, one night, my older brother he lives in Florida, was visiting my parents in Puerto Rico, and I was there also. And I arrived, I don't know, like at 2:30 in the morning from going out with friends or whatever. And my brother was sitting in the kitchen table. And I think he had a little to drink. And he said, so come sit, I've always wanted to talk to you. I said, oh, okay. So are you gay? My goodness, yes, I am. I mean, you know, I always knew that. Really? Oh, yes. He had been the ultimate playboy when he was younger. I mean, very good looking. He looks a lot like James Dean in the 50s.
Yes.
And dated Miss Universe at one point. And, I mean, he was a mega catch.
Uh-huh.
Worked for John Lindsay in New York.
Okay.
And, I mean, he was... And so... The word pato in Spanish is derogative for gay in Puerto Rico.
A duck. Yeah. Right.
Quacks like a duck, has like a duck. Yeah, okay. Well, he's a duck. He's got feathers. He's un pato.
Okay.
So we're standing in the kitchen. He goes, wow, my goodness. My parents have a son who's a pato and a son who's a puto.
Yeah.
As in himself.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
That's a funny one. I hadn't thought of it that way. Yeah, okay.
There's also another
interesting
age dynamic in the sense that...
he's much older.
He's much older.
Difference.
His oldest brother is the same age as my mother. His parents were the same age as my grandparents. I'm the first in my family. Paco's the...
Baby?
I was the unexpected. Let's put it that way.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
22 year difference. My oldest brother turned 80 this year.
Wow. And my mom will be 80.
My sister a year younger, and then my other brother, there's a 12 year difference between us. So I really grew up with my nephews and nieces. I just was never able to get them to call me Uncle Paco.
Yeah. So, Paco mentioned that I had joined the Army.
Uh-huh.
And that was not, I wasn't drafted into the military, actually joined the Army and auditioned for a position.
Volunteered.
With the United States Army Band in Washington,
D.C. Go defend our country.
You know, and it made...
In musical notes.
Well,
what was the motivation for that, if you don't mind me asking?
Well, I was approaching 30, and as a musician, you start to think about, you know, what is my life going to be like? You know, is it going to be this mosaic of... a variety of jobs and positions, which is a typical musicianly thing, or is there one position I'd rather have? So I was thinking along the lines of actually being a professor mm-hmm. at a university, and that was part of our initial planning. I mean, that we'd leave the DC area and I would take a position in some nice college town or something like that, and that's where we would set up shop. Mm-hmm. It didn't happen that way, you know. But I was starting the process of getting, you know, advanced degrees. Mm-hmm. And I was just finishing up my master's, and a position opened up with the United States Army Band in Washington. And a friend of mine said, Joe, you should consider this. You know, this might be a good, you know, fit for you. It may not. If it's not, then, you know, after 2 or 3 years, you know, once you've completed an initial enlistment, then you can leave it. But they will also help you pay for your education. Mm-hmm. So it was, initially, it was just a way to help me further the educational goal of being, you know, achieving the doctorate mm-hmm. degree. Mm-hmm. And that I did. And I liked the position so much, and they treated me so well, and it kept us in Washington. And, you know, it also was a solid, stable position, you know, mm-hmm. which is a rarity for a musician. You mm-hmm. know, artists are usually, you know, hobos yeah. to a
got you off the street.
It got me off the streets, so to speak. And but it didn't something that, you know, so we're now in our early 30s, and we really wanted to have a family. I mean, that kids yeah. was really important for both of us.
Do you have kids?
No, we do not. Okay. Now, and it's because
it was very difficult at the time, and Joe being in the Army.
Being in the Army was the issue. Primarily because it would have been easy for me to adopt a child, you uh-huh. know, and then that child would become my dependent through the military. Mm-hmm. But this is also the time, you know, right around the time of the Clinton comes in and the don't ask, don't tell policy mm-hmm. was instituted. And the it just would have been very difficult because I would have been the only person who legally is responsible for that child.
Got it.
Paco could yeah, not appear anywhere.
It would have been
anywhere.
Very difficult to have in the Army documents mm-hmm. the other parent being male. That would have given it away.
That would have given it away. I mean, that's the antithesis of don't ask, don't tell. It's actually you're stating it, you know, mm-hmm. publicly. We scratched that, but have always held a soft spot for kids.
They're my partner and I chose to have a child with a lesbian couple that we knew. Mm-hmm. So I have a daughter.
Really?
And she's 13. And it's...
And lives with you?
No. Oh. No, she lives in Charleston with her moms. Oh. But we see her, oh. you know, which is great. And that was, I mean, that was sort of, it's just, but there is something just knowing that I understand this desire to be a father, to mm-hmm. be a parent. Mm-hmm. And kids are incredible. Yeah. I just find that interaction
is... there's so many kids that need a home, you know?
But, I mean, I wonder if that would have been an option for you. And the reason I mention that is wondering if that would have been an option for you all to find, you know, a surrogate of some sort, or...
You mean, you were talking 20, 30 years ago?
Yeah.
Of course that would have been an option. But here again, there would have been no legal rights whatsoever. I mean, it would not have been... And I think we really wanted
either
to be
active. Either he stayed in the Army or not.
Got it. Okay, so right.
It was
right.
a matter of... deciding,
right,
and I think staying in the Army was the right decision. He stayed the 20 years,
and Paco became a very quiet part of that scene in the sense that, you know, I mean, I think
I couldn't go. I was not a legal spouse, yeah, you know, yeah. to go shopping at the PX or to hang out
right.
with the spices, yeah, the spouses yeah, yeah. at the parties, you know, yeah. and bring in the dishes for the courses, you know. Yeah. Picnic.
But at the majority of our events that were within that group that I was with the Army Band, everyone knew.
Yeah.
You know, and Paco was very much accepted.
But you had to tread lightly. I mean...
Correct.
The problem with Don't Ask, Don't Tell was that it was fine while you were okay and behaved. But if you did something that one of the superiors
would have
been viewed as improper or, you know, you were late, they could turn you in. It was very easy for anybody to turn you in and say, well, you know, he's gay and he's living with this other
and
guy.
It would have been
that would generate an investigation.
And some dishonorable discharge or something
likely.
Like that?
Likely. That's yeah. the way it was. So on the one
seemingly
hand,
really discreet.
It allowed for gays to stay in because the government was not under
they weren't actively
executive order
pursuing.
They could not ask you. But if somebody shared it, it was still illegal.
Yeah.
And they could kick you out. It's changed dramatically.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's a different world. I remember when Joe was going through his security clearance. That process, they interview everybody. They interview me. They interview the neighbors because he would play at the White House. So you need a top security clearance to be in the building, hanging around in the rooms waiting for, you know, to play the piano or for the president to come out or even the vice presidents. And so one night at 3 a.m, we get a knocking on the door. I'm like, oh my God, Joe, I wake up. I go over there. Yes, this is the police. Mr. Holt, please. I'm like, oh shit. They're coming to check our home in the middle of the night. This is my thinking, waking up, you know, in the stupor of the sleep. And so I ran into the other room, put down the bed that we had in the room. I messed it up to appear that I was sleeping there and the whole thing. And I went to Joe, there's a policeman at the door. They're after us. What are you talking about, Pablo? Yeah, they're coming in to check the house, I'm sure. Let me get to the door. Joe goes to the door. Yes. Oh, Mr. Holt, yes, this is Arlington Police. We just wanted to let you know that a car was driving and a truck.
And backed into my car.
Backed into your car. So
they were filing the report.
They were filing
the
report. And we have, you know, the car under your name, so we wanted to let you know so you can file it with their insurance company. On my heart that I had up here, like, oh my God. You know, they went, oof.
But that's incredible. That was default mode. First thing.
Persecution.
You assume that.
Yeah.
That I would be persecuted.
Yeah.
Or we.
I mean, pulling down the bed, you know, and messing up the sheets, and I mean, just creating this scene that would not, you know, that would.
Yeah, we don't live in a police state where, you know, they could do this. You know, but in the middle of the night, you know, well, let's hope not. In the middle of the night, I mean, awakened like that, it was shocking.
That's for sure. Yeah. If the cops are banging at my door at 3 a.m,
I
mean, and specifically asking for me.
Yeah.
And, you know, interestingly enough, in 89, when I went through the initial process of enlisting, I mean, you have to go through a recruiter and you have to answer questions and they want to make sure that you're not a druggie and you're not an alcoholic and you haven't had multiple, you know, arrests on your record for this, that, and the other. And there were three questions in a row. At this point, three questions in a row. The first one was, have you engaged in homosexual behavior?
That was on the questionnaire?
It was on the questionnaire.
Military.
In the military, absolutely. And and I had been instructed by my colleagues already, you know, in the organization, just say no. Just say
good
no.
Good old Nancy Reagan.
Just say no. So I dutifully checked no. The next one was, do you engage in homosexual behavior? No. And then the third one, which was the kicker, do you intend on engaging in homosexual behavior? And I sat there for a second, and I looked at that piece of paper, and I pulled over the recruiter, who was a kind of a good buddy, and I knew I could do this with him. I said, I can't answer this question. And he said, why? And I said, the turn of the century is coming up shortly, and I can't guarantee anything. And he looked at
you.
He said, just answer the question. You know, so I checked no, and that was it.
It was just weird.
You know, do you intend on engaging in homosexual behavior?
Yes.
I mean, once you get into basic training all together, God knows what's going to happen.
That question was eliminated.
Those three questions were eliminated.
I would hope so.
Yeah, that was a plus. They couldn't ask you. You know, in the midst of the. Interviews, you know, that the FBI would engage in.
That was my next question.
Whether
they could verbally...
They could ask you before, yes. But they could not ask anybody after Don't Ask, Don't Tell came along. If anybody volunteered that information, that was different. But they could not specifically ask.
Okay.
They could not specifically ask.
It was tough times, too.
I mean, that's... because
you couldn't live an open life.
Right. I mean, and I guess that's what I was going to say. I mean, you know, especially, I mean, considering your reaction with the knock at the door, which at 3 a.m. with police asking for Joe, of course you're going to be, but it's interesting.
And
that
then when I think about it rationally,
assumed, right?
Well, Arlington police, what do they have to do with this?
You know? Right. I mean, but your head was in that place that
constantly.
Made, yeah.
Head was constantly.
We also lived in a time when, I mean, this is post, well, not quite post AIDS scare, I mean, that was still definitely there. We hadn't concocted all the whatever medications they now have that, you know, can keep that at bay, or even there's some new drug now, I understand, that actually you can take that, you know, keeps you from even getting it in the first place. So, I mean, those things didn't exist.
Did you experience, I mean, did you find that a lot? First of all, was your immediate circle, were there a lot of LGBT people in your immediate circle, or?
We had
friends, but you know, we have friends who are straight.
We had married, both sets.
Straight couples, right. I mean, we socialize with everybody. We're not a one-track, you know.
I just wondered if at the time you experienced any loss. I mean, like my family, for example,
for
there
me?
Were so many
yes.
people
oh,
that disappeared.
Course.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Of course.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, yeah. And I was asked to read at a close friend of ours who passed away from AIDS, and I got up there and I just couldn't. I mean, it was just so sad. Because he was so, so vibrant and so full of life, and it was just taken away so quickly. I just started crying. I couldn't read. I mean,
it was tragic.
It was traumatic, what was happening.
And it was constant.
Constant.
I mean, there was memorial service after
memorial service.
Yeah,
exactly.
I mean, it was just one after the other after the other.
It was horrible.
Yeah, but we also had, I mean, Paco mentioned that we had straight friends and gay friends both. I mean, it was a healthy mix, you know, and a lot of it had to do with who we are as people and how we interact with people. And for both of us, we've been around not only people of our own generation, but of a, you know, an older generation. And so a lot of our, interestingly enough, a lot of our straight friends were older couples, right? Probably, you know.
Well, I grew up with older
10,
parents.
20, 30 years older.
Right.
You know,
I was my parents' bartender when they had parties at home.
Yeah.
You know.
Forced labor.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. I mean, I knew how to mix any kind
that.
Of drink you'd like.
At seven, right?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Me too.
Yeah. So you have to know how to, I knew how to behave, number one, because my parents would not put up with misbehavior in front of their friends. But I engaged in conversations with them about current topics at a very young age, which was wonderful because it was all conversations. And for a little, you know, puny 7-8 year old, you know, normally sent to bed.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I could hang out with
them here.
And I could converse.
Yeah.
And mine,
isn't that great?
I loved it.
I absolutely loved it.
And mine was similar in that, you know, I being the piano player, you know, I mean,
Of course.
My parents would have me play the piano with, and all the adults would be there, and so I'd get a chance to interact with them much like you did. I mean, I wasn't making drinks, but.
And conversations I had with my dad. I mean, when I was in high school, I remember having a conversation with my dad, because at home, there was a tendency, and it's, you still see it, of calling black people negritos.
Oh, yeah.
But it's in an endearing term, you know? I mean, it's like, no negrito, you know?
Yeah.
Un negrito. It's like, oh, I'm so sorry because he's black.
Yeah. Yeah.
And one day I said, Dad, you need to stop doing that. What? It's a term of endearment. Well, you don't call your friends blanquitos,
right?
You know, the little white ones.
Right.
Why are they little?
Right.
Well,
right.
I said, well, what do you want me to call them? Well, you don't have to call them anything.
Right.
They're seres humanos.
They're human beings.
Beings.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, from now on, and this was a long discussion, I mean, talking about an hour, discussing back and forth, you know, but that's, you know, that's what we've called them all along. And like, no. And from now on, I will call them seres humanos. And every time we were talking, you know, we were talking down the street or so, you know, you remember el ser humano that was in the corner?
Yeah.
You know, and so it changed a little bit, but I was like, Dad, you don't need to refer to them by the color of their skin.
Yeah.
What's wrong with the man who was at the corner?
Yeah.
If he had been white, would you have said the white man at the corner?
Right.
No, because the assumption is that anybody who's not is white. So, negrito, amarillo, rojo, any kind of color.
That cultural generational thing, it's really... it's an interesting thing to...
But that's the kind of discussion I had with my parents.
Yeah,
I loved it.
Yeah.
And they respected me in discussions.
Mm-hmm.
That was
fantastic.
The other part.
Yeah.
I think that I always appreciated of them.
So I have so many questions for the two of you, but I know, But I do.
Wow, that clock is ticking.
So let's see. So I'm curious. So from law to theater. So what took you to?
No. I stayed in law. The theater was the thing. I did that in college, and I did a lot of theater. I sang with a glee club.
Okay.
I sang with a choir while I was in Washington.
So theater has always been an interest in yours. Okay.
He's always had a healthy interest in the arts. Yeah.
Okay.
Very much.
Okay. Sure. All right. Well, cool.
Joe brought music to our house, so mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah, there was that. But there's also, didn't you say that that Georgetown Gilbert and Sullivan?
Oh, so the Gilbert and Sullivan Society at Georgetown is the only theatrical organization in the country with its own law school. Dum dum.
Did I not get that?
Did that just go over your head?
That was our motto.
I know. First of all, I'm lawless, and another thing, I am not a theater person.
Oh, so you know, you normally have a law school with its own
you don't like
among the organizations you can join as a theater group. Well, ours
they always
is a theater group,
it as
its
a
own
theater
law school.
It's our law school.
Sorry, I just immediately burst into laughter.
Anyway,
I feel like I'm.
But, you know, the whole I Love Lucy, you know, Desi Arnaz and Lucille Ball. So sometimes we play act that. Yeah, because so here's the funny thing.
Yeah.
So here's the Lucy character.
Ricky.
I'm the Ricky Ricardo character, even though he's the Hispanic
and
I'm not.
We play off each other because he's the musician. But Ricky, I really want to be in that concert. Let me sing. I want to do the Beethoven Ninth with the Sarasota Orchestra that you're, you know, preparing for Anatoly. I really want to sing in that show. Ricky, please. Sometimes it's the other way around.
Yeah.
Sometimes I play Ricky.
Yeah.
But Lucy, what are you talking about?
Yeah. So that's a good segue, actually. So what is it that, it sounds like you've had an incredible relationship over the last 35 years.
Mm-hmm.
What
keeps it going?
Yeah.
Patience. Patience is the number one. You have to be very patient with each other because we're very different. But there's one thing I think we both respect, and that's the love we have for each other.
Hmm. When you say respect, what do you mean? Respect? You respect the love for one another.
We respect each other.
We respect each other in the sense that, you know, so we come at things sometimes from different perspectives. I mean, think about it. Here is someone who is legally trained, you know, and has more of a legal mind, and I'm artistically trained, so that we have different viewpoints.
Oh, yeah.
You know, as we look at situations.
It seems like it would be very balanced in that way.
It is balanced, but there are times when it
drives him nuts.
It bucks heads, you know, sometimes because you get entrenched in your way of thinking.
I'm curious, with a legal background, does that mean that you're, is it very sort of black and white? Fact-based?
I'm also Virgo. I tend to be very organized. I tend to be very, straight in sense of
I know you well.
Filing.
I'm married to one as well.
Yeah. I'm a Leo, so.
So he goes all over the place.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm
Aries. So it's, you're like one of the women.
I record every receipt for tax purposes that is legally deductible
so that
I can have it. Yes.
I
have an organized file system. I balance the checkbook every month. I do, you know. And Joe's all
Thank God
over
for
place.
People like you, because I think for people like us,
we need people like this.
Definitely. I'd be in prison if it weren't for my husband.
I'd be there with my,
lasso?
Lasso?
A lasso, trying to bring him in, you know,
reining
him in.
So I was introduced one time at a function, and they were sharing appreciation for who I was and what I brought to this organization, and they were saying that I was a little bit like a motorboat in a bathtub.
Really?
A motorboat in a bathtub,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
just
yeah.
constantly running and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah,
and then they said, they went on to clarify.
He thought about it.
And then he said, and thank God we have Paco, who's the harbor master.
That's great.
It's true.
But it is true. But we also have something else that, you know, no matter what happens during the day, whether it's, you know, a good day, a bad day, an indifferent day, or whatever, we always hug and kiss before we go to bed. Always.
There's always a kiss before we go to sleep.
Absolutely.
That's, yeah. I mean, that's what, yeah, my partner and I do the same thing. It's yeah, like kiss before we leave the house in the morning, mm-hmm. kiss at the end of the day.
You never know what the day's going to bring. What I want my last thought to be the kiss I gave him before.
That's right. I mean, in addition to just, you know, demonstrating your love for that person, but just, yeah, I never want to end anything on an argument, you know? You know what I mean? I want it to be, it's always like looking for quick resolution. I mean, if that's, it's typically possible, you know, mm-hmm. if you just mm-hmm. pinpoint what happened, take care of it and keep going, right? Yeah, it's true. And, you know, and flowers and all that kind of stuff. I don't know. That stuff really matters, I guess.
It does.
The little things.
Yeah.
Being thoughtful.
Right. Exactly.
You know?
But if there were more of that in society generally, we'd have a better life.
Yeah. Everybody. And we've had some incredible experiences, you know.
We both love to travel.
Yeah. But just travel and friends and, you know, socializing and, you know, being a public person that I am, you know, mm-hmm. Doing all the things, you know, performance-wise.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that adds to our tapestry, so to speak.
Yeah,
our calendar is...
Our calendar, yeah. Our calendar is pretty
crazy. You guys are
wicked. Wicked.
With rehearsals, performances, you know, I mean, it's... Yeah. Somewhat lonely sometimes, I'll tell you, because he's busy with rehearsals and I got a meeting and I got a da da da, and, you know, and for me, okay, well, I'll stay home, watch TV tonight, you know, or I'll go to the gym and I'll work out.
Do you like time alone though? Like,
I do.
I love it.
I do, but not always. Yeah. You know, there are times when, you know, but yeah, I like being by myself and doing my own things.
But, so, a quick question. Balance. So, what's been the, what would you say has been the biggest challenge, maybe? I mean, 35 years is a long time together. And I don't want to end on, I mean, it isn't, but, or maybe there's, you know.
I don't think we've ever had a...
We've never had a major bump
on
the road. I mean, it's been a pretty steady progression. There have been the versions here and there, you know, where everybody has their valleys and their peaks.
Oh, yeah.
But I think we're constantly on a upward trend. You know, I mean, that's the way we've been ever since day one, and I think that's the way it'll be forever.
I think so.
And then you know, you devote energy to that. Like, you know, that's what I love. That's what I'm hearing. You know, you take care of each other, and you try, you know, you help each other. You guide one another, you know, in this sort of mutual desire.
When we're sick, when we're healthy.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
We also have incredible friends, you know, that I would say are part of our family. I mean, you know, I mean, gay people, we tend to include friends as our family.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
and
yeah.
You have to, you know, for support. And I think that we're blessed with an amazing amount of people that surround us that also nurture and support us. And
That's really great. I mean, I'm a total...
I want to see us succeed.
Yeah. That, right. You're in a supportive...
There are some people that came to our wedding who I think, you know, would not have actually ever considered going to a gay wedding before.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. But they did because
they believe in your story.
They believe in us because it was us.
Yeah.
And I think it helped transform them to a certain extent.
Very conservative people who love us.
Yeah.
And we invited them. And one in particular said, you know, I don't really agree with what you're doing, but I'm glad you're happy and I'm glad you're together.
And was there to support it.
And was there.
I mean, that was a big step, it sounds like, for this person.
I think it changed him.
Yeah.
Attending the wedding and seeing.
I think it did too.
Yeah. Because they've become very close to us. So, you know, if we were able to change the way of thinking of one person.
Yeah.
There's a potential for changing to 3-4 people.
Yeah. Well, this has been amazing. Thank you for inviting me into your house, having this conversation with me, because to me, this is what this is all about. Once again, you know, I'm incredibly grateful that you shared this, and I, as a result,
thank you.
But, you know, feel you closer to you. I mean, it's...
Thank you for thinking of us.
This is what it's all about. This is, you know, human connection, right?
Fantastic.
Yeah.
And the way to record this for future generations.
Yeah.
Hopefully in the future, there won't be a need for this because it becomes so normal.
Yeah.
That why are we... We don't even need to record things like this.
I know. But, well, I can't thank you enough. It's a beautiful story. Thank you for sharing that. So,
thank you, Robert.
Thanks.
Thank you, Robert. Yeah.
I wondered.